The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way. And that's with Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts and help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations, and their tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription at babbel.com/bluewire. That's 60% off at babbel.com/bluewire, spelled BABBEL.com/bluewire. Rules and restrictions apply.
On the upcoming RotoWire Fantasy Baseball podcast, Fred Zinke will talk about his veteran cuts and why he cut them. We also have big news among NL East pitchers and some who we picked up in the recent Fabapalooza. All next on the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball podcast. Greetings, everybody. Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball podcast. Jeff Erickson here with Fred Zinke. And notice there is no doorknob anymore. Fred Zinke has removed all doorknobs in his house. No, that's not true. He has a new locale, and this is where we'll see Fred for the next few years.
That's right. So, yeah, there are doorknobs in this house. I just don't have a really comfortable spot to sit in front of any of them. So I'm going to try this radical theory of sitting in front of a desk. We'll see how it goes.
Crazy. So anyhow, very busy week. Let's start off in the NL East. We have big news today coming out of Atlanta. Max Fried is going on the IL with a forearm inflammation. They said inflammation is a precursor to Tommy John surgery. The Braves have said that is not the case with Fried right now, but they also, at least according to David O'Brien's article in The Athletic, they anticipate this being longer than your basic 15-day stretch on the IL. 15-minute would be very short, but 15 days still is not going to be enough. He's going to be shut down completely from throwing for a little bit.
Yeah, so huge impact on Fried's fantasy teams. I was trying to decide when I saw this news. I have zero Fried shares, but are there circumstances where it would make sense now to cut Fried?
I thought about that and brought it up on the show. I want to see a little bit more first.
Yeah,
that's a little hasty.
Yeah. We'll know more by Sunday. His ERA is close to 2 this year. Last year, 2.48 ERA, 1.01 WHIP. I think. We'll play this game then. How long would Fried have to be out for you to cut him in a 15, a 12? It's almost like the same decision.
2 to 3 months. I put this way. I've held on to Brandon Woodruff all this time.
Who's supposed to be back around the beginning of July.
Right. Maybe. If I'm holding on to Woodruff, I'm going to hold on to Fried. I think they're in the same bracket.
Yeah. So I'd say the same thing. I'd say if he's expected back, say in 2 months, so that's mid-July, I'll hold on to him because they also often don't meet their timetable, especially pitchers. If they're saying early to mid-July, then that means I can maybe count on him by the end of July, then I'll hold on to him. If they're talking August, I think I let him go.
Yeah. I think that's probably the fair construction. And I think a lot of it also depends. Do I have 3 other injuries? Do I have no other injuries? Can I afford, if I can afford one stash, if he's my only stash, or I have maybe 2 stashes tops, then it makes sense. If it's the third log on the fire, I got to make a decision. It's either him or what the other stash, injured stash, or say if I've got Taj Bradley and I'm just, let's say theoretically, not my AL Tautwar team where I'm definitely stashing Taj Bradley. It's going to be a harder decision. Then I'm going to really kind of be pushing it a little bit there. The Braves, they have 5 games this week. They were off yesterday. They're off Thursday. This kind of buys them some time. Anyhow, Jared Schuster is the likely candidate to get called up and start on Wednesday. Now keep in mind, they're also down Kyle Wright. Which hurts them a little bit. Dylan Dodd and Schuster have both been hit around a little bit whenever they've pitched. They've got Morton, they've got Strider, they've got Elder. They got Elder, Morton, Strider, and then like Magic 8 Ball after that. And, you know, we're looking at Dodd maybe and Schuster. Soroka, when he's ready, will slot into one of those spots, obviously. But I think there's some concern about whether Soroka is going to be ready.
Yeah, I think counting on Soroka at this point is tough to do. He is a 5.23 ERA so far this year in AAA. I know ERA doesn't mean everything, and it's just five starts, but I don't know, maybe a sign that he's not, you know, fully ready to go, or at least not fully ready to help the Braves. Yeah, we've hit a point where the Braves rotation, which seemed really deep, now you could argue that Bryce Elder is their number two starter right now. Charlie Morton's been just okay this year. A little lucky, whips high, like, yeah, you could argue right now that Bryce Elder, who didn't really have a rotation spot when spring training started, is now their number two starter for their foreseeable future.
Yeah, he's at worst a solid three, and he's been very good so far.
Yeah,
And that's one of those Fab bits. We've talked about a lot of pitchers, young pitchers in Fab, and you know whether it's been worth it, the price of these guys. More of them came through this week. We didn't really talk a ton about Bryce Elder. We talked about him because he was going to get a two-step that week when he first came up. We were excited about him, but it wasn't like we were like, oh, you know, Bryce Elder, he's definitely a top 50 prospect or anything like that.
No, for sure. He's someone who, yeah, it was uneven performances in the minors. I was kind of in on him last year when he got called up, but strikeout to walk rate last year wasn't good. The strikeout to walk rate this year is better, but he's not a huge bat misser.
No, he's not.
Tons of ground balls though. So I think that's going to be his calling card right now, is just a lot of ground balls. He's not the one, not even close to the 1.74 ERA that he has right now, but he could be a mid threes. I think he could be one of those pitchers with a respectable but not great strikeout rate, and then like something around 8 K per nine, and then an ERA in the mid threes. Yeah, he's a, for fantasy, he's a solid, whatever you want to call him, number three, number four, probably once his luck evens out.
Yeah, I'm trying to look to see if there's anybody else still. They've kind of raided their farm system.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of their top guys have been pushed up, right? Or they've been traded. They don't have a whole lot of depth in this farm system. I'm looking at the Braves depth chart, and like you go compare the Braves versus, say, like the Dodgers, who have like 20 guys in James Anderson's top 300. The Braves only have 7 or in the top 400, excuse me. Schuster's the tops of that, and he's only at 116. So, yeah, it's created all this, you know, homegrown talent, and it's already up there at the major league level. So, yeah. I mean, let's not get too critical of them. And keep in mind, too, they lost a slew of guys when they had the GM that got caught cheating, and they had to let guys go. They lost draft picks, too, as a part of that. So they don't have the depth in the farm system that other teams do.
No, they don't. Looking at the Braves so far, though, they're 24-11, which is pretty awesome. They already have a 7-game lead over the Mets, 7.5 over the Marlins. But their division's clustered after that, but that's because every other team has a losing record.
I thought you were going to say the division is a cluster, but that's also true. But,
it shouldn't be. Like, it shouldn't be. The Mets and the Phillies were both supposed to be quite good this year, and they still might be. We'll see. Like, the Phillies have had injuries. The Mets have had pitching injuries. I think with the Braves, their hitting is so good and their bullpen is good that they can kind of work around not great starting pitching until the deadline, at which point they probably add, who knows, maybe someone really good, or maybe a couple arms, rotation arms who aren't very good but can eat innings. I can see a path for the Braves still to run away with the division. So they may be willing to kind of just mess around with Dodd and Schuster and see how they do so far. That doesn't mean fantasy managers have to do the same thing. I'm not interested in picking either one of them up in a mixed league right now.
I would watch Schuster start today, but at the same time, if he makes the next start, guess what? It's at Texas on Monday. We don't like Texas. We don't want our mama. Don't let your babies grow up to pitch against Texas. At least, especially at Texas right now. At least it would be a night game. It's Monday, so it can't be a day game. Obviously, day games in Texas, I feel like that's like a big runaway.
Yeah, I think so right now. And Schuster, so far, he has one of those strikeout to walk rates where if I wrote it out for you, you'd think I put the numbers backwards.
Yeah.
He has more walks than strikeouts. So you'd be like, oh, Fred, you messed that one up. It's supposed to be 9-5. No, it's not. It is 5-9. If someone wanted to pick up Schuster and put them on their bench, sure. in a mixed league, if we ran Fab tonight, no, if I knew Schuster was going to be in the rotation, I still wouldn't. I wouldn't put in. He wouldn't even be in my waterfall. But one good start, and then maybe I'll take another look at him.
He would. He would be in my waterfall in leagues where I don't have to start him right away.
Okay.
Like in the FBC, I would. He would definitely be in there. Mm-hmm. Because I don't want any part of Boston or Texas. But then like home start against Seattle, maybe. Mm-hmm. We'll see. I mean, that seems like part of the vast middle for me. Mm-hmm. Not like at the high end. So I could be wrong about that, but we'll see. Max Scherzer got scratched from today's start with neck stiffness. Comparing it to the neck stiffness that he had back when he was with Washington, where he, remember he missed a World Series start because of this, where he just couldn't function. They hope that he can start this weekend against the Nats. But that hope's a good thing, but it's not a plan.
Yeah, I think the Max Scherzer experience has been pretty uneven for fantasy managers so far. I think when you drafted Max Scherzer at his age, right? Like you knew he's going to turn 39, around the midpoint of the season. Like, I think you knew that this is what you were signing up for. Like, as long as there's not a major injury, but I think you knew you were signing up for some things, neck, back, something. As long as there's not like an arm, shoulder, and he makes 12 starts this year. Like, but I think you knew last year he made 23 starts. I feel like you knew you were signing up for 25 starts, something like that. And, this is just part of it. We'll see where the neck injury goes from here. But it's been a really uneven experience with him so far, right? Like with the suspension and then coming off the suspension and having a really dismal start after that. Basically with Scherzer, you got one okay start, one bad start, one pretty good start, one three inning start where he got ejected, and then a terrible start. And now he's, who knows if you'll get a zero, you might get a zero from him this week. So there was a risk with drafting Scherzer and Verlander, and I was in for drafting them. I actually have no shares of either, but that was more draft position than that I was like necessarily avoiding them. But this was the risk of both of them, was that, anything more than, like I said, 25 starts was probably a bonus. If you got 25 at their age, you're probably doing well.
I kind of blew past the Verlander injury concerns and I'll be fine. And labor, at least I did. And he's made one start so far. So it was a decent start. We'll see him in a tougher venue here in Cincinnati this week. So we'll see what happens. The Mets are really reeling right now. They got to have callback David Peterson, who was a big flop, by the way. And a lot of people wanted to use him and Tyler McGill. McGill's been better, although his whip's pretty high. It's been tough. I mean, the Mets are playing sub 500 ball right now.
Yeah. And this is similar to the Braves, where the rotation, which was supposed to be good, has really kind of gone up in smoke, right? Like McGill was a really cool fantasy prospect. Someone people were really interested in a year ago. His skills don't look good at all so far. Like you said, Peterson is someone people were intrigued with. He hasn't been good at all. And jumping back to those older pitchers, it's interesting how Scherzer had the concerns with age, Verlander had the concerns with age, Jacob DeGrom, who just the timing of his injury we never talked about, had the concerns with age. DeGrom's
next on my list, by the way.
Yeah, he's no spring chicken either, but he's not as old as these guys, but he has the concerns, and now we're just in early May, they will all have missed starts already.
Exactly. Let's talk Jacob DeGrom. You got him at a windfall price at pick 60 in labor. You've actually won the benefit of that bargain, even with him currently on the IL. The question is, how many innings does he need to throw for you? Because there's no timetable for his return right now. He's still doing light throwing. He is not throwing from a mound yet.
Yeah, let's say he can be DeGrom-like. So he was DeGrom-like up till he was gone. 267 ERA, 0.76 whip. His ability to have a whip under 1.0 is just unbelievable. Like the last time he had a whip over 1.0 was 2017. I know he's had some injuries, but still, even those are short time frames. You'd think one of those time frames he would have been really unlucky and had a whip over one. But anyways, I think I took him at pick 60. 120 innings would justify that pick at how well he pitches.
Yeah.
Do you think he even needs that many? Like 120 innings for DeGrom would be, at the way he's pitching right now, would be like 180 strikeouts.
Yeah.
And super low ratios.
So, and wins are a category that we play in, though. So two wins so far. Yeah. You're a quarter of the way to that 120 goal. You end up with 8 wins and 180 strikeouts. Yeah. And those ratios.
Yeah.
It would be worth it. Yeah. I mean, that's better than you're getting from any closer, for instance.
It would be like, at that point, I think it would be like not a bad pick. No, it wouldn't be a great pick at that point, but it'd be not a bad pick.
Yeah. All this talk, though, it reinforces that you think you have enough depth. You don't. Big leagues and fantasy. I had I have a score sheet team that only score sheet team that won it last year. I had like 7 or 8 starters. I wanted to get more balance because my rotation was so good. And just try to like maybe go ahead and get more offense on the team. And it's okay. The team's fine. It's like a 5 games over 500, but like, you know, injuries happen, and I feel like I probably was a little too hasty in trading away some of my depth and starting pitching. I did pick up a number of guys, but I have like Burns, Strider, Wheeler, Darvish. That's a good start, right? But like Peterson is getting starts for me. Ashcraft was getting starts for me. Manaea is just so much for that talk about the increased velocity, by the way, Fred. And Aaron Ashby isn't going to pitch at all this year. So that was a mistake to take a chance on him. Like, I'll get him in May. I'm not. So right now I have 4 starters. I don't have that 5th. Ashcraft was my 5th and he was good for a while. Just got crushed in his last start though. And, slightly injured on the comebacker at the end of that one.
Yeah, I think so. This is something I've been writing about, well, for years, but especially this time of year in trade articles, is that like, trying to make trades based on balancing your roster during the first third of the season, I think is a bad plan. Unless, like, if you're giving up overall player value to balance your roster, like trading for need, I think is a bad plan, unless you feel like you're also trading for value. If you can find a deal where you're like, oh yeah, mm-hmm. I like this guy better than the other guy and I'm filling a need, perfect. But yeah. I think a bad plan from fantasy managers is making trades in the first third of the season where they're like, oh, I've got lots of pitching. I'm going to trade away one of these really good pitchers for a hitter. And the value on the deal is not great, not very good at all, actually, but it fills a need for me. I need a first baseman or something. I usually think that's a bad idea because it's perceived depth at this point in the season. And I've had lots of fantasy teams over the years where, you know, you get off to a start and you're like, oh, I got tons of steals. And all of a sudden you're big base dealer, whether it's an Estuary Ruiz type or something, all of a sudden pulls a hamstring and you're like, oh, I wish I hadn't have made that trade when I got rid of a bunch of steals because now I don't have any steals. And I think in the first third of the season, you trade for value, even if your roster is unbalanced. Mm-hmm. And then in the summer, you can try to balance your roster again if it hasn't happened, because a lot of it is perceived balance or temporary for balance, sure. Where someone, you think you've got a lot of pitching or you think you've got a lot of power, you think you got a lot of speed, and then injuries happen and you don't. So
right. And this was in the off season. It was before our keeper deadline, actually.
Right.
And that was part of it. But yeah, I was looking over that roster and yeah, I got some work left to do. I'm gonna have to go add some pitching. Never have enough. Never. And everybody else is grabbing, it's first come, first serve in this league too. So it's been pretty picked over, and it's keeping minor leaguers and all that. So all the top prospects are gone. There's no one that sneaks through. Like Brandon Pfaadt's not walking through that door in that league.
Right.
He's not walking through that door, period, right now. But we'll see. I mean, Pfaadt fell flat, but we'll see what he does tonight against the Marlins. A little bit of a better start, better opponent, better venue too.
Yeah, I'm definitely not giving up yet. I had an article out yesterday of streamers from Monday to Thursday, and I didn't put Pfaadt at the top of the list by any stretch, but I put him decently high to the point mm-hmm. where in some leagues, you know, he would make the best sense to stream, depending on your league size. So yeah, sure. I definitely haven't given up yet.
All right. Very good. Very good. We kind of highlighted this podcast about cutting veterans. So we're going to talk about that. But first, a quick note from our sponsor, Rival Fantasy. A new MLB season means it's time for a new kind of daily fantasy baseball. Rival Fantasy is the fantasy platform reinventing the way daily and weekly games are played. And they've brought new games to the ballpark this year that fantasy players won't find anywhere else. Rival Fantasy games include Fantasy Bingo, Head-to-Head Player Challenges, and Fantasy Book, where users can select over-unders for 2 to 5 players. With games like this, daily fantasy has never been better. Right now, RotoWire listeners can get a $50 protected first play. That means if you win your first play, you obviously get to keep your winnings. But if you lose your first entry, Rival Fantasy will fully refund you up to $50. Go to play.rivalfantasy.com/signup and use code ROTOWIREMLB at signup and deposit a minimum of $25 to get your first entry on Rival, protected up to $50. Now's the time to step up to the plate and become a Rival today. Welcome to the arena. Also, our podcasts are on the Blue Wire Network. As a consequence, we play their ads real quick here.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right. Thank you very much for your indulgence on that. And thank you for our sponsors for helping and keeping us in business here. So we tease this as you cut two veterans, boring veterans, to create space for, you know, Fabapalooza this past weekend. You cut bait in 15 team leagues, mind you. This isn't like a 10 team league. It's 15 team league, so it's deeper. You said goodbye to both Charlie Blackman and Mark Canha in respective leagues. Talk to me about this.
Yeah, it's just something that I really wrestled with, where I think that if we just said in a vacuum, like, do Mark Canha and Charlie Blackman belong on a roster in a 15 team league? I think the answer is yes. But at the same time, is there any real upside with Mark Canha and Charlie Blackman?
Right.
I think the answer is no. You know, like, Charlie Blackman hasn't hit for a high average in a few years. The last couple of years, he's basically like a 15 homer, basically no steals kind of guy. Mark Canha, same thing. Actually, they're pretty similar. Mm-hmm. As far as, they just seem to be on the slow path towards four steals,
right?
15 homers. So having them on my team, I really wrestled with this. Like, I think they belong on some roster, but on a healthy roster where you're trying to move up in the standings, like if you needed them as an injury replacement. Sure. But should they be like roster fixtures, or should they be the kind of guys that you drop and churn while,
yes,
you try to look at Emmanuel Valdez, Michael Garcia? I'm not saying, like, obviously you drop them for Matt Mervis, but I'm even just talking about the general concept of, like, did they belong on your roster full time, or do you churn them? Like, for example, would you drop them for Tyrone Taylor this weekend?
Oh, I'm not big on Tyrone Taylor because, okay, I had him last year. But
yeah, me too.
But then again, as I tweeted out about Josh Lowe yesterday, the concept of post-hype sleeper is one that I know and embrace, and yet, yeah, didn't act upon enough this year. So maybe Bleday, maybe Taylor. Lowe, definitely. Kelnick was a different level, but he's in that conversation too. You know, yes, you should be thinking about that. You should absolutely be cycling these guys. As Joel Hinart said, he tried to cut them both of it because he needed pitching. You know, these are guys, and you're right, you can recycle them back in when they have a good week, when they have a good schedule, when they have seven games, or, it, you know, maybe there's something there. But, you know, Charlie Blackmon on the road, and if you're not going to use him, I mean, he's kind of taking up a spot, and it prevents you from taking a chance. What if Emmanuel Valdez steals 25 bases this year and you didn't cut Charlie Blackmon because reasons? Yeah, I honestly think that's fundamental point about fantasy baseball is, you know, always trying to improve your roster, even if it's not necessarily for need. You're talking about this with trades and keeper decisions, but the thing, it also applies to just managing your roster.
Yeah, I think when I cut them, I did it on the assumption that I probably won't get them back, that someone else sure. will probably see the name. Oh, Charlie Blackman's on waivers. Like, I'll take him and bid a decent amount of money on him, whatever, $60, $70, something like that, and then keep him. And that's yeah. okay. So I had to be okay with that. I feel like with the NLDH, which I know isn't the first year for the NLDH, but now that we have the NLDH established, there are more options each week to stream among players that you think are going to get full. So there's guys like Blade who are intriguing, or Emmanuel Valdez who are intriguing. There's also just players like Jeff Zimmerman pointed out this on Monday, that Gavin Sheets is a really good streamer this week. They just have a really good schedule of righties. He's got a good spot in the lineup right now with mm-hmm. Eloy Jimenez out. So he's a streamer. There were other pitchers.
That's
other
the guy outfielders. I picked up this week, by the way, is Gavin Sheets.
There you go.
Went so three sheets to the wind.
Right. So there you go. So there's players like that. There's Rayleigh on the Rays. They had a lot of righties on the docket this week. He could have been streamed in a lot. He was available in a lot of my leagues. There's going to be pitchers. I think Texas plays Oakland later this week. Why not stream guys who are playing against Oakland? I think Robbie Grossman Absolutely. Is available in a lot of my leagues. Robbie Grossman's not awesome, but in a series against Oakland, I'd be happy to have him in my lineup. Yeah. So the decision was, you know, am I hurting my team by holding on to these players? Because I know it. Well, I don't know, but I think at the end of the year, Mark Canha and Charlie Blackmon have better stats than Robbie Grossman. But is that the wrong play? Should I be streaming the spot until I find someone who's really good? And in the meantime, you know, if I need to pick up some 1 week rentals, you know, at decent fab prices. So I cut them. It's not the move I usually make, but I think it's a move that I need to make more often.
I agree. And you know, what if Emmanuel Valdez or Michael Garcia turns out to be a guy that you keep all year?
Right.
And I that's what we're going for. You know, either a guy that helps us now for 1 week mm-hmm. or two, you know, is someone that we can keep all year. And, you know, both of those guys have 25 stolen base potential. You know, that's pretty massive. If it, you know, they also have potential to hit 210 and get sent back down, which is probably even the more likely path. But you got to take these chances. You got to break some eggs. I can't be afraid of messing up. I think that's something that it's a blind spot for me, for most people. And I think it's for the fantasy community. I think it's a blind spot where, yeah, there's that, you know, what's the, there's a paradox. It applies to life where you hold it. It's something that you have to begin with there. You value yeah. more. Yeah. The concept is escaping me right now. And
I totally know what you're talking about. I agree. Yeah. I think that's what it is. Once you have something, it's of more value to you.
Yes.
To keep it. I've always said that I think the top 2/3 of your roster that you keep through easy schedules, bad schedules, you know, whatever mm-hmm. week you got to put sure, them on sure. the bench. But the bottom third, at least the bottom quarter is rotational in most and outside of the AL and NL onlys, like the bottom quarter, the bottom third is rotational. I don't think I always live by it as much as I practice as much as I preach it. So I'm trying to correct that. And I just think with guys like Canha and Blackmon, like they're so far past the point of post, they're not post-night sleepers anymore. They're just old. They're just
yeah.
guys in their mid 30s who just
they're just sleepy.
Yeah. They just don't have it anymore. and again, like if Blackman's on waivers a week that the Rockies are home all week, I'm in. I'm happy to try to pick him up. I mean, so is everyone going to else. Everyone else is going to try to pick him up. You know, Canha, same thing. They were going to Cincinnati this week, so I thought about keeping him. But there were some exciting players on waivers. Mm-hmm. Canha's not going to – he has one season with 20 homers. He's never had more than 70 RBIs. Like,
right.
he's not going to – he's got one season with more than seven steals. Like, he's not going to have a big year. It's just so incredibly unlikely. And I felt like holding these players, especially having more than one of them on a few of them on teams. We talked about in March about drafting boring rosters, but I think that should only be the first 20 rounds or so, the first 18 rounds, maybe not even the first 15 rounds. Like, then I think it's time to get maybe up like a little aggressive with upside. I think I can do a better job with that. I can do a better job with that in drafts, but I think I can also do a much better job with it on waivers. If Michael Garcia is no good, I guess I just drop him in a couple weeks. And
yeah. Now they come, the only cost is he's compiling his stats on your active line.
Yeah.
But sure. So be it. Yeah. Again, you're trying to improve and you're going to break some eggs as it goes.
Yeah. It's not like these other two guys were lighting it up for me anyways.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mr. Grouch chimes in. He cut Brian Anderson, not the announcer, but the player for the Brewers, and took a chance on Christopher Morel. Perfect example of what we're talking about here.
Yeah. I would, now Anderson's been, he's been okay. It depends on league
size. He's had his stretches. You know, series against the Mets was really nice.
In a 12, I think that's totally, in a 12, I think that's a great move. In a 15, if Brian Anderson's my worst player, then I'm doing really well. So sure, go for it. Yeah. I think that's exactly the type of move. I don't know. There's a segue. I don't know how Chris Morel is going to do as far as playing time goes, but he's exactly the type of player where if the Cubs are going to play him regularly, like he can bring up post fantasy stats in bunches. Last year, homers plus steals, 26 of them in 113 games. And he's been playing well in AAA to start the year. Yeah, I think he's exactly the type of player that you chase. Lots of strikeouts, could be a low batting average, could be a real difference maker. He's someone who I'll be in on next weekend.
So, except for in labor, where I held on to Morel the whole time.
But hello, unlimited IL that allows you to
exactly,
do those things.
Exactly. So. Unlimited players getting hurt. However, I found out about the move until after the game started. So I didn't get him active this week, unfortunately. Okay. But it's all right. At least I have him and I get to see how he does. Now, hopefully, it's not his best week and then I'm screwed. But, that happens too. On a related note, Nico Horner did leave with an injury. It doesn't look to be too serious, is what we're reading. Imgo King said, or MAGA King says, do I have to make room for Judge, who's coming off the lineup, is in the lineup today, coming off the IL today? Do I drop Horner or Chapman? I'm assuming that's Aroldis and not Matt, because you're never dropping Matt Chapman. Are you dropping I drop Aroldis Chapman in a format that thin. If those are your two options to drop, I'm dropping Chapman, who hasn't pitched well in the last couple times.
Yeah, I for sure. That would be the drop. If it's Matt Chapman, you definitely. It's interesting because he mentions Horner or Chapman. Like, Nico Horner's really been really good so far this year.
Yeah,
which makes me wonder if it is Nico Horner or Matt Chapman. Like, is it a really small league? If it was that small of a league, I guess you'd have to drop Horner. Although I love Horner, I wouldn't want to drop him. But you can't drop Matt Chapman.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming it's Aroldis. Yeah, so all of that. Morgan asked a couple twin questions. I'm going to put them all together as one here. Alex Kirilloff, does he belong in that post-hype sleeper convo? Just got the call back up. They sent down Trevor Larnach, who was in the post-hype sleeper convo earlier when he was batting fourth for the Twins. Now he's batting in Rochester. St. Paul. He's no longer. They're not in Rochester. They're in St. Paul now. But regardless, he's down there.
He does belong in the post-hype sleeper convo. I'm not that confident in him, just a lot of wrist injuries, and I'm just not sure what kind of hitter he's going to be now. But absolutely, he belongs in the post-hype sleeper conversation. I was trying to think of player. So I would much rather have Chris Morel, but I think everybody would. Mm-hmm. That's why
he was banging down the door.
That's why Kirilov's a post-hype sleeper, because there's no hype. Yeah. Would you just drop the Mark Canna types to try Kirilov?
Yes, I would. Right. I would. Especially, if he gets a chance to bat in the middle of that Twins lineup. Let's see if the Twins have posted today already or not. Just to see where he's hitting. They have posted. He's batting cleanup. So yes, against Michael Wacha, no less. I might go to Yahoo Friends and Family and pick him up right now, unless you have already, or unless he's already rostered. But it'll be a race to see who gets there first. But I think you'll win that race, Fred. Do you have? I mean, how my team's pretty bad in that league. So
same here. My team, yeah. Do you remember we did the Yahoo Friends and Family draft? And at the end, we talked about how my team in those projected standings had run away with it. Yeah. That was the kiss of death.
Good times.
I have all these pitchers in that league that just have just been like awful. Like I'll be interested to do a, it's too early to do, but just an analysis on the return on early round starting pitchers this year. Mm-hmm. A lot of the misses are on my Yahoo. Especially even the non-injury related misses are on my Yahoo Friends and Family team.
So I just picked up Kirilov in that league, by the way.
While I was giving that detailed explanation to my team, you snuck over.
Yes, I did. Now I'm going to check on Christopher Morel while we're talking too, because why not? Oh, Mo Bacca's already got him. So, all right, one for two as far as in podcast pickups go. But you know, that league for me was the FOMO draft. That was I don't have any Jordan Walker. Okay. I don't have any, Anthony Volpe yet. Yeah. All right. Mm-hmm. I mean, at least he's running, I guess, but yeah, it hasn't really worked out too well.
No, I put him in our notes for today. Like, do you think there's a chance that Anthony Volpe goes back to the minors at some point?
Yeah, there's a chance.
Like his OPS is 627. It's probably got to go lower than that before he, like, 627 is bad, but not humiliating. Like, mm-hmm. But when you're 627 right now, a bad week, it could be 550.
Could.
And all of a sudden, right? All of a sudden, maybe you're a candidate to go to the minors for a while.
But it's not because Peraza just went on the IL for the Yankees. So unless they're really confident Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, they're going to just roll with Volpe.
I think the decision wouldn't be about Kiner-Falefa is 431 OPS so far this year.
Right.
That's incredibly bad. He hasn't played much, but
he's playing outfield. At least he has been, which is just sad and embarrassing.
You're right. The Yankees are probably banged up enough that Volpe gets a longer, opportunity. But there could be a point in time where the decision isn't about what's best for the Yankees. It's about what's best for Volpe.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So if they felt like if he had a really bad stretch of, say, a couple more weeks, the OPS started to dip down towards 500 and they said, this just isn't good for him. You know, maybe at that point he's had, for example, in his last three games, he's had 8 strikeouts. Like if that trend continued, maybe they look at just what's best for the player. If he's getting out all the time, it's probably not best for the team either. You just use Kiner-Falefa. Because you're thinking big picture, Volpe maybe goes down for 3 weeks, gets his stroke back, comes back up. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
But yeah.
The Yankees are 10 games behind the Rays already.
Yeah.
Which is just astounding because they're over 500. But at the same time, I mean, they're really, they're really in a tough spot right now. They're really trying to, and you look at that lineup. No, they got Judge back today, so that helps it a little bit, but no Stanton, like LeMahieu, okay, fine. You look, I for the Tout Daily contest, I decided I'm going to stack Yankees against Drew Rusinski and the A's bullpen too, for that matter. Mm-hmm. And I was struggling to find 4 or 5 hitters that I like, maybe that there's a point there. Maybe you shouldn't do that. But I plowed right through it anyhow and still found 5 of them, but, we'll see. I mean, I don't know. It's not an easy decision to do. It's not an easy way to kind of go. But at the same time, it was an affordable stack, I guess, is the flip side. You don't get to get an affordable stack against the A's that often.
Was Judge in the stack?
Of course.
Okay. So, beyond him, I was going to say he might hurt the affordability of it. But, Torres, Rizzo against the right-hander, that's good. I don't know if you got Harrison Bader into the stack or Volpe.
I did.
Trevino.
I did get Bader. Bader, Trevino, Rizzo, Judge. I think I actually got one more guy too. It's a bold move, Cotton.
Yeah.
Glaber. It's Glaber.
Yeah. Glaber's one of the few Yankees who's met or exceeded expectations so far this year.
Yeah, but that almost all that was early, I think, too. Although he did homer this weekend once at least.
Do the Yankees make the playoffs?
Yeah, I think they find a way. I don't know at whose expense, but I mean, it's crazy. The entire AL East is all in, discussing this right now. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, I actually think the AL East is going to get all of the wild card spots this year.
Yeah.
I think Toronto, Baltimore, and another AL East team, whether it's
so
the
Boston versus the Yankees. You're talking then.
Yeah, well, and I'm not ruling out obviously Seattle coming back. Maybe I'm being a little too hasty. Like maybe Seattle comes back, maybe Houston comes back.
Won't be the White Sox.
It won't be a two central teams. It's whether one of those, whether two West teams can, you know, can qualify for the postseason. Maybe I'm being a little too hasty. I don't think it's as much. Maybe I'm being too hasty, but I don't think it's really a lock that the Yankees, or even close to it, the Yankees make the playoffs. They're really banged up. Like the rotation's banged up. The lineup's not scary. It's okay. I don't know. I don't think it's going to turn out well for them this year.
I think you're probably right.
Yeah. About that. Yeah.
All right, let's talk about your fascination with the other side of that Yankees-A's game and Ryan Noda.
I don't know. Nobody's interested in Ryan Noda except for me, I feel like. Yeah. I keep getting him in leagues. I got outbid for him in labor because I bid $1. And because I got him everywhere else for basically nothing, and someone else bid $1, and I lost on the tiebreaker. Which, like, whatever, if I really wanted him. But when I looked at Ryan Noda, he was old for his levels. Like he's 27 years old right now. So, but like last year in AAA, 25 homers, 20 steals, 869 OPS. The year before in AA, 29 homers, 904 OPS. Mm-hmm. He has a tremendous walk rate throughout the minors and with the A's. Like this guy so far has been an on-base machine. He's got 21 walks in 109 plate appearances. Like his OBP is 404, and that's with a 244 batting average. I'm not into Ryan Noda as like putting down big bids on him, but I seem to keep putting down 1% bids on him and getting him because no one else seems to want him. His BABIP's a little high right now at 383. Anyways, I don't know. I just think he's kind of interesting, and there's obviously lots of playing time available on the A's for anyone who, you know, who can play well. And I got to feel like the A's have to look around at that 404 on base percentage for now and think we got to get this guy in the lineup. He's also a platoon guy, but I think he's an interesting streamer, just a guy you can use against right-handers.
Yeah, and I think it's a good reminder to separate the cruel, corrupt ownership of the A's versus the baseball people who are still trying. Noda sounds like you're like 20 years ago prototypical Moneyball player, you know, undervalued. Brent Rooker, too, who's leading baseball in OPS, I think, still.
Yep.
Which is, hey, we're now we're in week 7 of the season now. I mean, it's pretty late in the season, late to be early. It is on the early part of the season still, but I mean, that's a pretty good extended run.
Yeah. I mean, Noda I thought of is the old fashioned Moneyball guy. His career on base percentage in the minors is 407. Like you don't see a lot of guys even in the minors with a career on base percentage over 400, his OPS in the minors is almost 900 in his career. Again, I'm not saying he's awesome, but same with Rooker. Like there is fantasy value to be had on these weaker teams. Mm-hmm. There are players who, because
Ruiz, obviously,
right.
You know.
And the A's lineup so far this year, like it's not good, but it's not 30th, you know, in OPS or in WRC plus or however you want to evaluate them. Like they're not a good lineup, but yeah, they're right now 24th in OPS. Not the worst. Like
they put a hurting on the Royals over the weekend.
This? They're ahead of Seattle and ahead of Houston.
That the latter one is the one that I think are going to shake some people there a little bit.
Yeah,
because Houston has been really sneakily bad offensively. We've talked about it here. Yeah. I probably rambled on about it for a couple of times or there. I forget where I've talked about it. I know on XM probably I've mentioned it too. But, you know, obviously Jose Abreu has been a disaster. You know, Alex Bregman has been a huge disappointment so far. They're still without Altuve at second base. So that's
Brantley. Yeah,
Brantley. Brantley. Whatever.
Not to Brantley. Yeah, he doesn't make a big deal, but they can use
replacing
him.
They have a cipher offensively at catcher. I mean, now we're talking five spots in the lineup. You know, go figure that they're 24th. You know, there's only so much that Yordan and Tucker can do.
Yep, Chaz McCormick was like almost an afterthought for them at the start of the season. And then he was just on the IL and they actually missed him because he was hitting leadoff before he went on the IL and doing okay. They actually kind of missed him while he was gone, and they shouldn't be in a position where they miss him. So, I mean, you start to look at how teams are doing, actually doing, versus how they were perceived to be doing. Oakland is not a team that's great, but they're also, like I say, like their offense is good enough that you don't say, oh, I don't want any part of that lineup. I mean, if there's any lineup right now you don't want any part of, it's kind of in Cleveland. They're last in OPS by a mile so far.
Which is amazing.
Right.
Because this is, honestly, this is what we expected out of Cleveland last season.
Right.
And they kind of, and granted, we got it. It's been super cold in Cleveland for a lot of their games. Things can turn around, but they've been a disaster offensively so far this year.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and I mean, I wouldn't say if a prospect was called up to Cleveland, or if a Cleveland player who I would normally like was dropped to waivers, I wouldn't say, oh, he's on Cleveland. That team is so pathetic. I don't want any part of that lineup. I'd take him on the assumption that that lineup will turn around. So I don't know if there is a lineup right now that I feel so negative about that I wouldn't consider an intriguing player on that team. If you take out Cleveland, there's 100 OPS points, which is a lot, but not like a crazy amount, separating about 25 major league teams. So there's 100 points of OPS. Like I said, it's significant, but there aren't really teams sitting around a 600 OPS, which sometimes we do see at this point this year, other than Cleveland.
Right.
You know, everybody else is 660, 670 or higher. So I think it's just a good reminder that there is fantasy value to be had from the Oaklands, the Washingtons, the Cincinnatis, right?
Yeah.
So, and again, Ryan Noda might not turn out to be much, but I just think he's intriguing with his ability to get on base. He could score runs.
It's funny how much Tampa still separated themselves from the pack. That, like, if you look at WRC plus or WOBA.
Yep. Yep.
I mean, it's not even close. I mean, they're killing everybody in, like, home runs hit. I mean, Texas is getting close in terms of runs scored. In fact, they might be scoring more runs per game, believe it or not.
Yep.
Which is just remarkable when you think about it there. But still, like, WOBA, you know, it's Tampa by a mile. WRC plus, it's Tampa by a mile.
Yep.
But
OPS, Cleveland is 60 points up on the next team.
WRC plus is park adjusted. Colorado is second worst behind Cleveland. Colorado got shut out yesterday in Pittsburgh by Mitch Keller. Cincinnati, Detroit are right down there. Oh, yay. Go Reds. But Oakland, I mean, they're 17th. And that's park adjusted. So that shows that they've been a little bit, you know, if they played in a neutral park, they'd be a little bit better all along.
I wondered for Oakland, and I don't have the time right now to put in like a huge resource or her huge research project on this, but I wondered with Oakland if their pitching staff has been so incredibly bad that they spend the middle and late innings of a lot of games facing the soft underbelly of teams' bullpens. And that may not be true at all, but
they're already down 8 runs. Yeah,
that's right. When your team has a 7.26 ERA, 7.26, like they're a run and a half behind even the next team. When your team has a 7.26 ERA, Like you have fallen behind early, guaranteed, in a lot of games. And I wondered in how many of those games, like, did they fall behind, like, you know, 7-1 or something in the first 4 or 5 innings, and then they just get some mop-up guys, and then they can tack on a few runs.
I think some of that is their bullpen is blowing these games open.
It's true.
Or blowing leads in many cases.
I'll look up ERA by starter and see how bad they are, because you're right, that would be a better indicator. Yeah. But either way, even if that's happening, it's still happening. You still get the fantasy value. Oh, no, their rotation ERA is 7.72.
Okay, never mind.
So they're basically not bad far all off around.
The guy from Japan, Fujinami. I should really know his name properly, but he's been awful. He was awful as a starter, and now he's no longer starting. So there's that.
Yeah.
It's been bad all along. JP Sears is interesting, although he just ran out of gas last night. But he actually, and then of course Mason Miller's interesting, but now he's hurt, which is just brutal for them and for fantasy. But just make it stop.
I will say I'll look at Oakland hitters. I'll look at any team's hitters. I will not. Mm-hmm. I didn't want JP Sears. I will not look at Oakland pitchers.
I don't blame you. It's because you're not going to get the win. So,
there is a team with a worse whip among their starting pitching staff than Oakland's. Better ERA, 640, but a worse whip than Oakland. There is a team with a 171 whip among their starters. Do you want to take a guess on what that team is?
Royals?
Nope.
Reds?
Yep.
Yay.
171.
Yay.
Among their starters. And think about it. That's a team with three starters that were quite coveted as intriguing. I wouldn't even say sleepers. Well, like
Ashcraft's disaster on Sunday did a lot towards that. And Lodolo's been, you know, really bad lately too, unfortunately.
Yeah. So between Lodolo, Green, and Ashcraft were all pitchers that people were excited to draft. And
Ashcraft was a very late excitement. People weren't excited at the beginning of draft season. In fact, most people were like doubters on that one. So those people were probably justified a little bit.
He's actually been the best whip. He's got a 133, even with the blow up. Yeah. So he's helping the 171. If it wasn't for him, you're right, he'd be even worse. Lodolo is 175 on the whip so far.
He's been really rough the last 3-4 weeks. That's been pretty awful. Other pitchers we could talk about here. Yep. Dylan Cease. 50% walk rate now. I mean, I should say not 50% walk rate. That would be a record, but he's walked 20 guys in like 40 innings. He's been really bad, and he got knocked around hard by the Royals. Last 3 or 4 outings have been pretty bad for Dylan Cease.
Yeah, and I don't know if it is all a walk rate thing, really. Like sure, overall, like his walk rate, it's up a bit from last year, but I mean, he walked 5 in his second start. That second start of the year was 5 innings of 1-run ball. He had one other start where he walked 5. That was 6 innings, 2 earned runs. So that's not what's killing his ERA. In his last few starts, he's given up 6 earned runs, 4 earned runs, 7 earned runs. In those starts, 3 starts, 7 walks. Not good, but not atrocious. What's happened with Dylan Cease is the strikeout rates come way down. So the first couple starts, 10 strikeouts, 8 strikeouts. Since then, we're seeing a lot of 5. We got a 3. That's a couple sixes. But the immense strikeout rate that he had last year, we aren't seeing that right now. I have one share of Cease. It's an important share to me, unfortunately. I took him because just that tier of low-level aces was gone, and he was kind of the last man standing. So he was the highest guy on my list.
That happened to me in yogurt.
I took him. Yeah. I worried about him going into the year because I felt like he was the perfect candidate to struggle with the new rules because he walked so many batters that he was really reliant on batted ball luck and strikeouts, you know, to get out of innings. And I was worried with the shift rules and the less batted ball luck for him that the walks would start to be a bigger problem. More of those would come around to score. I'm not totally seeing that exactly when you break it down start by start, but I am worried about Dylan Cease, not to the point where I'm taking him out of my lineup, but to the point where I wish I didn't draft him.
Yeah. I think I'm
leaving him in though.
Got him at pick 58, I think. I'm like, I thought I'm getting a good price on him at least. I don't love him, but hey, it's a good price. It's kind of like you with DeGrom.
Yeah.
Yay.
When I took him, I didn't feel good about it. Right. And then it was a draft shortly before the season. And then remember on opening day, there were all kinds of blowups. And he came out at night, was one of the last games of opening day, maybe the last game of opening day. 6 1/3, 10 strikeouts, no walks, 1 earned run. And I was like, okay, the Dylan Cease pick is fine. All right. My projections. Yeah, I don't know. We'll see how this whole Cease thing ends up. I tend to not fully scratch guys off my list, even if I'm nervous about them. I just try not to project them too aggressively. I'm starting to wonder if maybe I should scratch some guys off my list. I didn't like him. I still projected him. I still took him when that group of aces was ending. I don't know. I wish I just went down to the next tier or just didn't pick a starter that round.
I don't blame you.
Yeah, it was round 3 or 4, and I didn't have a starter yet. And I just, it was round 4. It was round 4 in a 15 teamer, and I didn't have a starter yet. And I was just like, I got to take a starter. Well, not if he pitches like Dylan Cease is.
No, unfortunately.
And that team, everything's fallen apart with that team, really. That was the other thing. I thought the White Sox would be okay this year.
Yeah. I thought I did the same. In fact, I was almost borderline bullish on the White Sox, and boy, was I wrong about that. And the thing is, there when the top guys don't do anything, they just don't have the depth behind it at all. Like Kolas did nothing so far. When you know Moncada's been hurt and they've gotten nothing from his replacements. Anderson was out, they got nothing from the Sosa, I think, is the kid that they called up, and he did nothing. So it all adds up after a while. The funny thing is, the team where I have Cease is actually pretty good. It's TGFBI. I'm 23rd overall, but I'm third in my league, which tells you something about our league. But it's a pretty damn good league. And on that league, I got Cease with at 4.13. So pick 58, I got him at there. I went J-Rod, Semien, Klasse, Cease, and then Eloy. So Gunnar Henderson, who I saw some chatter about in the forum earlier there too. I'm holding on him, by the way. How is this team any good? I guess everybody else has disasters out there too.
Yeah, that's what it is. And I mean, the middle rounds are often where you make or break your fantasy team. Because like you said, everybody has some disasters at the top. So if you've got some Esther Ruiz types who we already talked about, but some players you took in the middle rounds that are really paying off, that or some late rounders, right?
Then like Brandon Marsh was way over his skis. He's kind of regressing now, but
I do not like Brandon Marsh going forward. I'll be honest with you. When you do, when you dive in on his advanced stats, like, it doesn't look, he in trading leagues, he's like I'm at the point with Brandon Marsh where I'm resisting writing about him again. It's like I go to write a Yahoo article and I think, who should fantasy managers trade away? Brandon Marsh. No, you already wrote about him. Stop it. You can't write about Brandon Marsh again. Like, you have to leave. I feel like I have a rule for myself. I have to leave like 3 or 4 weeks in between mentioning a player. And Brandon Marsh is like at the top of that list right now, where he just screams, try to trade him away, you know, at a higher value in a league like.
Well, TGFBI, you already dropped his older brother in Charlie Blackman too. So there's that.
Pretty much. Yes, that is true. Dustin May is one of my other guys where I feel the same way about, where you just look at the advanced stats and you're like, okay, your 2-to-1 strikeout to walk ratio just does not scream mid 2s ERA, sub 1 whip. Like, something's got to give here, but I can't write about them too often.
Yeah.
So exactly. If you have those players in a non-trading league, you just keep rolling them out there. And you know regression's probably coming, but you just keep rolling them out there and hope that when it comes, it just doesn't hit too hard.
Indeed.
Because we do see sometimes where these players just outperform their advanced stats for the whole season or chunks of the season.
Well, Dustin May is always, I'm glad you brought him up, because
he has a lot.
He's like, that's been his MO all along. And he throws so hard. You're like, at some point, you know, the strikeouts are going to come. But we always said that about Thor too, right? I mean, I kind of feel like it's like Thor Jr. here in a way. And also have had the TGS too, for that matter. Keep in mind, still with May, I mean, he came back late last season. And so I feel like there's still perhaps another level left in him. And he's getting good results otherwise. I think he might break that mold just a little bit. I probably wouldn't be looking to trade away Dustin May right now.
Well, it's all, I mean, it's all into like what you can get for someone. And the Dodgers do have some pitching magic for sure. It's just his strikeout rate this year is significantly lower than it was in previous seasons. And the walk rate's not the highest it's been, but pretty close. It's just a 198 BABIP with these shift rules, I just feel like is not even close to sustainable. So it's more when I write him in the articles, it's more like, if you can sell Dustin May as like, this guy's the next really good Dodgers pitcher who's going to have an ERA of 3, then do it. If the person you target for a trade says, you know what, this guy's ERA is going to be 4 in no time, then that's not your trade. Then just keep May and just keep rolling with him.
And the trickier part too about this is, you got to replace him with somebody, right? Trading him for? And who steps into his spot? You got to have 9 pitchers in most formats there. And are you going to be hard pressed? We're having such a hard time filling these spots right now. I know that's like, intellectually, that's the right thing to think about. Are you going to get a good, what's a good buy low for Dustin May right now?
That's a really good question. Let me see if I can find someone while I'm trying to find someone who's a good buy low. I will say that my good friend, Scott Pianowski, who he always likes to, one of his lines that I love, he'll say, like, don't offer me, and we're in a lot of industry leagues with him, he'll say something like, you know, don't offer me terrible trades, I have the internet too.
Yeah,
is one of his lines, which is great. And you're right, he's right. In an industry league, offering someone Dustin May as though he's an ace, like the other person's going to say, like, this guy's not an ace. But when I write, and you're writing for people in home leagues, and right, and more in random Yahoo leagues and things, like a lot of people will look at Dustin May's mid-2s ERA, sub-1 whip, he's on the Dodgers, and say, this guy's like, this guy's the next big
stud. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. And so, he once was the next big thing. So I, you know, you, funny you mentioned Yahoo, because I, while we were talking, I pulled up Yahoo, one of our leagues, and because, you know, one of the things you have is the trade market, trades that have actually happened today with him. So here are the one-on-one, there's been 3 one-for-one trades with Dustin May, and they're all for hitters. Dustin May for Kyle Schwarber, Dustin May for Nick Senzel, and Dustin May for Estuary Ruiz. Now, I got to wonder if there's a draft pick in there or something that we don't see. Or like a keeper salary, but even then, I mean, I'm hard pressed to see that one being fair, unless there's some other consideration we don't see there. But it's kind of interesting though.
The Schwarber one is in a regular league.
I mean, that's a snap.
The Schwarber one is a really interesting one where, yeah, like especially, you know, if you found a team that needed pitching and had some power, and you're like, hey, this Schwarber guy's hitting 188, like he's killing your batting average. You know, I've got a really good pitcher here in Dustin May, right? Like, if you don't ask, you're not going to get. I was more looking for pitchers that I would swap him one for one with.
And I didn't see a single one of those trades, so that's kind of funny.
No, but that's there you go. There's the type one. Like, maybe you're going for power, and you're going to offer pitching, and instead of trading a better pitcher with worse ERA, worse WHIP so far, you try to give them Dustin May before what, in my opinion, the regression eventually comes, and all of a sudden you come away with Kyle Schwarber. I don't think anyone in an industry league is trading Kyle Schwarber for Dustin May, but
yeah, it's a snap call. I mean, it's like, yeah, yeah, absolutely.
But how much longer would Kyle Schwarber have to hit one? If Kyle Schwarber was hitting 188 in July and Dustin May still had the same ratios, could you make that trade? I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe.
You could.
Yeah. Maybe. So yeah, that again, if you don't ask,
right,
you're never going to know.
PJ332 asks about Alex Bregman. And if he's a cut, I don't think he's a cut, but I mean, at least I wouldn't ever cut him in a league. If I had him, I don't have him anywhere because I also said not to get him at the asking price. He's hitting right now. He's hitting 205, 4 homers, 16 RBI, 20 runs, you know, part of the Houston malaise, 0 stolen bases. That's just not part of his game anymore. Here are the 1-for-1 trades with Alex Bregman. Justin Steele. That's an interesting buy, you know, sell high, buy low on both, you know, you get both parts of
there. There's another one that's similar to that Schwarber trade, right?
You
take a pitcher who's massively increased his value in recent weeks and trade him for an established veteran hitter who's off to a slow start.
And then there's one other hitter for hitter trade, and that's Bregman for DJ LeMahieu, which,
I'll take Bregman. I am not a Bregman guy. I just see there's no steals. He hasn't hit for a high average since 2019. So there's two categories already where he's not going to be special. I'm just not a Bregman guy. Houston's offense doesn't look like they're going to be great this year. Maybe they'll be okay when Altuve comes back, but I have a hard time seeing that offense being great now. So I don't know. I'm in a 10-team league, I could see cutting Bregman.
Yeah.
In a 12 with a really small bench, maybe. I wouldn't rule it out in a 12 with a really small bench, depending on your needs. Maybe you have another third baseman on the roster. So like maybe you have Devers and Bregman was your corner infielder, something like that. And you're like, you know what? I'm going to start streaming the spot and try to find someone who's really good. So I would say, yeah, I would be open in shallower leagues to cutting Bregman. And again,
I wouldn't cut him.
In a 10, you would.
No, I don't think I would.
Still wouldn't.
I mean, I got to think Houston's lineup's going to be better. And with that, he'll be better. But I mean, I would cut Abreu. I think that's the difference. I'm more inclined to say yes on cutting Abreu than I am Bregman.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Me too. It would more be, yeah, I don't know. In it, like I said, in some of those Yahoo type leagues, like a 12 with a 3-man bench or something, and there are plenty of those leagues out there. I don't know. I think I could at least look at it. I was trying to think of someone off the top of my head, but it would cut him for. Mm-hmm. Like, I wouldn't cut him for those prospects, for example, that we were just talking about. Would you have cut him for Matt Mervis?
Yes, I would. I was just going to say Matt Mervis is who I would cut him for. Although, James Anderson was on our SiriusXM show today, and he says there's some, he's a little afraid that they might platoon him, platoon Mervis. But I think Mervis has got enough of an upside that it's worth it to me. So that's probably my line right there.
Yeah.
If and when the Reds call up Christian Encarnacion Strand, that's another guy that's in that sort of neighborhood. I feel like Abreu is pretty close to Charlie Blackman territory. You just drafted him sooner, but he's not going to run.
Nope.
And he hasn't hit a homer since like July. So I'm slightly exaggerating, but I think he had like three homers the second half of the season last year and none so far this year. What makes him any different? And he doesn't run, and he's at a non-scarce position. What about Jose Abreu makes him, you know, less cuttable than Bregman? He's older than Bregman.
Yep.
He doesn't play the right position. I mean,
I mean, Abreu. Abreu was 2 years ago was pretty awesome, 117 RBIs. But I think. No, I think Abreu's another guy. In a 10, he's a cut for sure. And in a 12 with a small bench, I think you just cut him and you start moving on. You don't cut him for Ryan Nota, for example, but you cut him for Mervis. You cut him for someone who you're really intrigued with, or you cut him and just start streaming the spot with players with good matchups. But I don't know. I don't see Bregman as having that much really more upside than Abreu. I don't see Bregman hitting for average. I don't see him stealing bases. I don't see him hitting for a lot of power. Like, he hasn't shown a lot of power. He hit 23 homers last year in 155 games.
So the point is, we don't like either of them that much.
We don't,
really.
Which is kind of like saying we don't really like the Astros offense,
maybe.
I'd say right now. We like,
and there's not a whole lot of help on the way either, is the funny thing.
I agree. I don't think Brantley's going to be much help. Like, he'll play, but they've got Alvarez, they got Tucker, and eventually they have Altuve. They got three good players. The rest is, I don't know. Like, you could cut Bregman or Abreu and regret it, but I think it's a risk that I would take in some of the leagues. Like, I was trying to look for a third baseman that I would cut him for. Josh Young from Texas.
I would take Young over Bregman.
Okay.
I would.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, Young could hit 35 homers this year. He might hit 220, but what's the upside with Bregman now? And it's team oriented, because let's face it, 2019 is over.
Yep.
You know, happy fun ball is gone. I mean, it's a happier, funnier ball than last year, but it's not 2019 either.
Yeah. So Young's owned or rostered in 75% of Yahoo leagues. Bregman's 96.
Yeah.
I don't know. So there's one that I would at least consider just off the top of my head.
This has the risk of being that this didn't age well podcast, by the way. we'll see about that.
Nobody listens at this point. This is when you can really throw the ball projections.
Yeah.
How about Gunnar Henderson, who's off to a terrible start? Would you rather pick up Gunnar Henderson? He's younger, and hope that like he gets his act together, or just stick with Bregman?
I do have Henderson and Yogurt, and I think one of my mains, and I'm not considering parting ways with him. Let's put it that way. He's such a good prospect. I don't know. Prospects start slowly sometimes. Go back to the whole post-hype conversation. But then again, post-hype usually happens after a period of introspection and change, not just boom. Sometimes players do get it in season. It might take a while, though. That's the tough part. And the problem, too, with Gunnar Henderson is that the Orioles have like a surfeit of infield prospects just, you know, bursting at the seams waiting to come up. Mm-hmm.
No, it's true. I think if I was in that situation, or if I had to cut one of them, I think I might cut Bregman. Yeah, I think I would.
The more I think about it, I didn't draft Bregman, but I'm not going to cut a top 10 round player this early.
Unless his name's Jose Abreu.
Well, yeah, I guess
he was like a sixth, seventh rounder.
He's about to pick 100, wasn't he?
Yeah, something like that. I thought I saw another one who's rostered around the same rate. I would cut Bregman right now for Rowdy Tellez. His roster rate in Yahoo's about the same as not Bregman, about the same as Henderson and Josh Young. So I would Tellez already has 9 homers. I think he's already shown his power is legit.
Yeah.
I think that he could hit for a similar average to Bregman going forward. Neither one of them are going to steal bases. Yeah, so there's a space there in shallow leagues where Bregman can be a cut.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah.
We're over an hour already. Wow. Time flies on us.
Time flies when you're having fun.
Yeah, it does. Just quickly through the notes real quick. Jose Altuve could be back sooner than expected. Might begin a minor league rehab assignment next week. Mason Miller dealing with elbow tightness. Victor Robles went to the IL. Shame. He was actually quietly having a pretty decent start to the season. Nico Horner, we talked about. Hamstring tightness. Max Scherzer, we talked about. Missing tonight's start. Might pitch this weekend. Max Fried, we covered. Jacob DeGrom, we covered. I think those are the main injury notes. Oh, George Springer out. He's got an illness today, so he's not going to play today. So
he has struggled with illness. He's a weird one. Like, there's always something with George Springer, I find, over the years, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he hasn't played in a full slate of games since, or even close to it, since 2016. There's just always something. This year, he's been sick for off and on for the Jays for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And he's off to a really slow start this year.
Yeah.
Offer Dustin May for him. Yeah, exactly. Hey, do it in a home league. Someone might bite on it. Dustin May's off to a good start, but that's the kind of he's off to a Schwarber like start this year. George Springer is.
I can see it.
He will come around. I really believe that.
I do too. Yeah. I do too. Ramon Urias is on the IL with a hamstring strain. We mentioned Oswald Peraza for the Yankees, which gives Volpe a little bit more rope, I think. I think that covers it there. Appreciate all the great comments in the forum there. I love all the interaction. I like that you guys are talking with each other as well as asking us questions. So thanks for those of you live stream with us. Thanks for those of you who now are listening on demand or after the fact on wherever you get your podcast. Big thanks to Fantasy Rival for their sponsorship. Always helps keep the bills paid there. So Rival Fantasy, excuse me, let me get it right. Go to play.rivalfantasy.com/signup to use that code RotoWireMLB. Please go patronize our sponsor if you're looking for a game like that. I think it's some good stuff there. We will have James Anderson tomorrow and guest to be named later on Thursday. Thanks for listening to RotoWire. Have a great day.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers. The trusted choice recommended by leading experts with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.